For those of you that know a little about our state, you'll know that Western Australia's navigational history didn't begin and end with the British. The French indeed played a major role in charting the southern and western coasts of the continent. A legacy that remains is the naming of our many regions in French: Cape Naturaliste, D'Entrecasteaux National Park, and Esperance, just to name a few. But more than this, there are some wonderful stories to be told about the life and times of the French explorers and navigators. And who better to tell them than the great-great-great-grandson of one of the most prolific cartographers during that time. Welcome to the program, Henri de Freycinet.
Thank you for having me here.
And also in the studio with me is Peter Woods, who has a collection of maritime artefacts. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
Now, Henri, before we talk about your great-great-great-grandfather and his journeys, tell us about why the French were sending expeditions to Australia in the first place.
Well, the story behind the expeditions to Australia started quite a long time ago, probably around the 1600s, when the French were trying to discover the Terra Australis, which were the antipodes, the remote land on the southern hemisphere that the French and most of Europeans were looking after because of the mythical stories about it and the mythical wealth that there were on these lands.
This was a time of the Enlightenment too.
Later on came the time of Enlightenment, and the expeditions started really around the year 1600 and became more prolific and more valued in the late 1700s, when you had expeditions like the La Pérouse expedition trying to touch base in Australia just after Cook, actually, in fact, and then got lost in the Pacific, and a few other sort of expeditions were sent off later on. Under the Baudin expedition itself was really started off just after the Revolution, in the time of Enlightenment, when scientific people back in France were trying to gather a lot more information about the southern hemisphere. And really, the expedition started off then and was carried on at the time of Napoleon Bonaparte. He was checked and modified the expedition a bit, but the true spirit of the expedition is really just after Revolution period.
Let's go five generations back and take a look at Louis de Freycinet. He was born in France, and at the age of 15, he joined the Navy. Are there any family stories that are handed down to you about the early life of your famous ancestor?
Well, Louis-Claude had a brother as well, which is Louis-Henri de Sosa Freycinet. They joined the Navy together, and together they started their career back in France. Louis-Henri is actually my direct ancestor, and Louis-Claude, who participated to both expeditions, the one of Baudin and his proper expedition that he carried out himself later on in 1817. But the two brothers started a very quick, very rapid career in the Navy back in France. So they distinguished themselves in battles in the Mediterranean against the British and the Portuguese.
Let's have a look at the Freycinet brothers then, because the first trip was under Baudin.
Yes, was under command of Nicolas Baudin, and the expedition left with two ships, left from France to the southern hemisphere, going to Australia. And the expedition was a very prolific expedition, bringing lots of material, fauna and flora specimens brought back to France, which is still to date one of the most prominent scientific expedition of the times.
So what was the purpose of the expedition? Because it wasn't really to gain land, was it?
No, it wasn't in a colonial goal. It was really scientific and trying to bring back information on the land and its inhabitants, and also the different specimen of flora and fauna. Also minerals. About 1,500 samples of minerals were brought back, and also dozens and dozens of boxes of sketches and reports brought back by different scientists which were on board. There were anthropologists, astronomers, mathematicians, a very wide range of scientists were on board.
That was a very successful expedition. And what was the role of the Freycinet brothers?
It was a very successful expedition in the way that they brought a lot of things back. But the expedition didn't go too smoothly. A lot of tension started really early on the beginning of the voyage between the crew and Nicolas Baudin. Sadly, the expedition was a bit diminished by these tensions on board. the role of the two Freycinet brothers on the expedition. Louis-Claude was one of the person responsible for the chartering, and that's why, hence, you have on most maps the name of signed by Louis-Claude de Source de Freycinet. But his brother, Louis-Henry, my ancestor, was a navigator on Baudin's ship, and he was responsible, really, for the navigations around the coastline, and hence why quite a lot of names around the western coast of Australia hold the name of Freycinet and all the members of the crew like Amelin and Milius.
Freycinet Island.
Freycinet Island, Freycinet Cape, the Freycinet Bay of Freycinet, Freycinet Peninsula in Tasmania, and little other places as well.
After this first voyage with Baudin, which was successful, Louis de Freycinet went for another expedition.
Yes, he went on another expedition in 1817, starting from France, from Toulon. And the interesting story about this expedition, as well as being a very important scientific expedition about magnitude and the magnetic effect on Earth and navigation. The interesting story apart from that is that he took on board his wife, Rose, which is now well renowned for her journals, her letters that she wrote all along the journey, which were some of the first accounts of the life on board ship and the views of a sensitive woman voyaging around the globe, which at the time the Navy didn't allow women on naval ships, and she had to disguise herself as a sailor, as a young lieutenant, to board the ship. Louis made arrangements prior to the departure of the expedition to modify the cabin very quickly after the departure from Toulon. That was known by the naval chief of staff, which was very badly taken, and a lot of action were taken to try to stop the expedition and stop Rose and get her off board. But they never managed to do so because the governors of the places where they stopped were so charmed by Rose that they didn't take any action and they let her go along the voyage.
This is quite a love story, really.
It is a big love story because they were just married 2 years before the expedition and didn't quite have the heart to separate. So Louis took a lot of risk to have her on board. She went on through the whole voyage with him as being the only woman on the ship at that time, and in any time is a very, very difficult thing to do. They got shipwrecked in the Falklands on the way back, which was probably a very dramatic experience for a young lady in those days, and they spent about 2 months on the island eating the only thing which they could find, which was seal mainly. Then they lived together, and sadly she died in Paris from cholera.
It's remarkable that Rose went on this expedition, and not only that, she did some magnificent journals. Peter, do you want to tell us about those journals?
Yes, with the journals, I was lucky enough to be looking for artefacts, as I said earlier, and it came to me that this was available. It came out of a collection, not from the Freycinet family, but it came through the family. So I managed to get this. That is really the start of me collecting for the foundation. And then after that, I started collecting under my own right under the Woods collection. So we now have a whole lot of items, particularly a lot of French and particularly a lot of course, Freycinets.
I think it's interesting, too, that you get a female perspective. And she was only 22 at the time. She was just a very young woman.
Exactly. So she wasn't the first woman to circumnavigate the globe. There had been a few other women doing that before. But she was the first one, really, to give accounts and lively accounts of what she saw from the ship, inside the ship, and on the places which they discovered, like in Polynesia, in Port Jackson, in all the places where they went. She gave a very sentimental, vivid account of what they came across, which wasn't the case in those days, because in those days the reports were military reports and scientific reports, so very strict and very formatted report, and you didn't get the emotion that you have in a woman's writing, and that's where these journals and these letters make it really interesting, because that's one of the first feelings of somebody discovering a new place.
Tell me about the boat that he was on and where he went on this expedition.
Well, they started off from Toulon on the Uranie. That's in the 1817 expedition of Louis and Rose. They stopped in Gibraltar. That's where they've been tried to be stopped by the French Navy. Yeah, and then went on to Rio de Janeiro, where there were a fairly strong French community down there, and there were a lot of French families, so they had a very social time there. Louis started his first sampling of fauna specimens and also started his calculations. And then they went on from Rio to various places, the Cape, Mauritius, Port Jackson, Shark Bay, and carried out different scientific calculations there. They went on to Polynesia as well. There's traces of their passage there. There's also a little island in the Pacific Ocean called after Rose. That's a little, as we say in French, a little twinkle of the eye to Rose's love story with Louis. And then came back, as we know, shipwrecked, the Uranie, just off the coast of the Falklands. Then the expedition took on a very different look then, because they had to spend a lot of time on the island. That's another very interesting part of the story, when they went on to an American ship, which took them a lot of persuasion to persuade the American ship, the Mercury, and went to Montevideo in Argentina, and then back to France, where Louis got court-martialed for having lost his ship, because that's the normal procedure in those days. When a captain lost his ship, he was to be court-martialed and questioned about it. The outcome of that was that he wasn't punished for this and was rewarded on the other end.
Rose and Louis were a sensation when they came back.
They were a bit of a sensation because the general public heard about the story and heard about her being stowed away on the ship. And so that made a bit of a sensation. But it was very much downtoned by the French Navy, which was a bit upset and frustrated of her not obeying the orders of coming off the ship. So the French Navy was a bit sort of stubborn, and so they downtoned the expedition a lot.
Did you have any stories when you were growing up from your own parents and your grandparents about any of this?
I didn't get to know my grandparents, sadly, but my father told me a lot about the stories. He went on about it, his personal life, which was pretty well fulfilled as well, and told me about the family history. It's really when my father died 4 years ago when I really started to put myself into the family archives and the family history, trying to see where it started from, what was the outcome of it, and where it led.
And you, Henry, yourself have continued the tradition of being a seafarer.
Well, yeah, in a different kind of way, because in those days when you enrolled in the Navy, it was much more of a lifetime commitment. You either became a priest, a monk, or military serviceman. And after a very short studies, I went on working in France and in England. And then after a very peculiar event, I started to think about joining the Navy, because my father had pushed me all my childhood to become a Navy officer. After a while, I thought, well, maybe actually it's what I should do. So I joined the Navy, and it's been 5 years now. I'm serving as a petty officer in the Fusiliers Marins. It's a rifleman. We're mainly shore-based, and we are the infantry branch of the Navy.
Obviously enjoying it?
Enjoying it, yes. It's been 5 years now, and we'll see where it leads.
So we'll talk about the purpose of your visit to Australia now, because there's an exhibition at the Western Australian Maritime Museum.
This is actually the third time that I come to Australia. The first time, so came in 2006 to launch the Friends of the Woodside Valley Foundation. This time I'm here for the launching of the Journeys of Enlightenment, which is a great exhibition which is taking place at the Maritime Museum in Fremantle, starting on Thursday the 16th and open to the public on Friday the 17th of October, which will go on for a year. And the exhibition is about French explorers on the Western Australian coastline. It's got great material, great documents, some of them never seen before by the public, a lot of them coming from private collections. It's something very interesting, something that I think the Western Australian people will be very much interested about.
Peter Woods, you've got quite an investment in this particular exhibition because some of it is yours.
Yes, I have the Rose Diaries and also maps and further other items. And we've got one particular item which has never been seen before anywhere, and that's come from Large, which is where Henry's house was, or their chateau. Of course, this is before Henry started looking at what was happening with his collection and the family's collection. So there's, over the years prior to that, there's been a lot of stuff that has come out of France into various collectors around the world. And I've been one of those. But what we wanted to do is to make sure that we could get as much as we can for the West Australian public and put it on show. And also, obviously, we wanted to make sure that that is acknowledged in the right way. So what better way to do it was helping with the museum to do that.
What's your interest in maritime artefacts?
Well, it started when I started something completely different, which was looking for a label for a wine. I've got a vineyard and a number of labels, and I was looking at the French names and started to use those names and thinking how, where they all came from. So I went to the person that I thought would have all the knowledge, and that was Professor Leslie Marchant, who is a knight of the realm of the French. He wrote the definitive book, France Australe, which tells a story of what we've just been talking about from early the 15th and 16th centuries right through to the 19th centuries, particularly with the French, and that sparked my interest in the whole thing. So I thought, well, there's a lot of this is not coming to Australia, and it's all about the West Australian coastline, and particularly it's about the French. So what I did was start to look around, and then, of course, someone said to me, why don't you set up a foundation, which I did.
And so that's the Woodside Valley Foundation.
That's right. And that has its own collection, and I have my own collection, but effectively in par with each other. So we try to show things around West Australia regularly.
Where on earth do you find all these manuscripts when you're a collector?
We have a staff. We look at all the auction houses around the world. We've been buying from there. We have a consultant in West Australia. That's Robert Muir, Rare and Old Books. We look at private collections that come out of nowhere. People obviously are looking maybe after someone's died or something. And we just have a radar of everything. We try to do as much as we possibly can find. Sometimes we don't think that the pricing is right, so we won't get it. But if it's something with the French, we try to get as much as we can.
I think it's fascinating that all these manuscripts and artefacts come out of the woodwork from nowhere.
Yes, they do.
So, Peter, how did you find Henry?
Well, it came through, I was working or asked to go on the committee for the Australian Map, which was celebrating the 400 years of Dutch hitting the coast of Western Australia. On that, we were looking for descendants. We're looking for Dutch, we're looking for French and for English, and nothing came out. Then all of a sudden, I got a call from the headquarters in Canberra, and they said, oh, well, we've just had an email from Henry Freycinet. And I said, oh, I'd like to get in touch with him. So we got in touch. Firstly by email, I think it was, and then I rang him and had discussions. And I also spoke to his mother at that time. She was English, and so I could understand. And she said, oh, you want to speak to Henry? So that's where it all started. And then we brought him out for, as he said earlier, for the Friends of Woodside Valley Foundation.
So, Henry, did you have an interest in these sort of things at a young age?
Really started after my father's death in 2004. I had been in contact before that with the Australian Embassy in Paris for different events that they were putting together. But learning about Australia on the map, I really wanted to try to see if I could make a contribution to the event. Not me personally, that wasn't the goal at first. The goal was really to make the Navy participate in the event, maybe by sending a boat or maybe sending a delegation, something like that, because I was in the Navy at the time. It didn't quite work out that way for various reasons, but I was posted in Noumea in New Caledonia at the time when I got in contact with Peter. Then things moved on from there.
Do you ever think that you might make a voyage yourself?
Well, it will be a different kind of voyage because obviously I'm a very poor academic, unlike my ancestors who were great scientists and seamen. Maybe a different sort of voyage, because there isn't many things to discover now back on our planet, but there's probably different sort of voyage that we could imagine, probably of discoveries of the people and rediscoveries of the people and the sort, if that makes sense.
One of the things that's happening, there is a small documentary of Rose and Louis being done by the museum. Both Henry and I, last time he was here, were talking to them. It would make a famous movie, and we'd just looking to get somebody to help do that.
So. It has all the elements, doesn't it? Yeah.
It has all the elements, and that's really something that Peter and I are really also very passionate about, and something that we really like to come off the ground.
Move over, Pirates of the Caribbean. Here comes Louis and Rose. Henry, what's your message for the people of West Australia about this exhibition?
Well, my message will be go and see it as soon as you can. It's running for a year. It's an exhibition where you'll have material which are first seen, first unveiled to people, to the public, and with very interesting things, which probably to some people who already know about the story will make maybe more sense. But to people who don't really know the story of the French names along the Western Australian coastline, will make them see and understand better the connection that there is between those names that they see on the road signs when they drive along the roads, and the explorations, and where do these names come from. Because most of the names that you drive past are from these expeditions, and some of the names of fauna and flora as well come from these expeditions. There's a little frog in Tasmania, which is called the Fresnet. In France, you have small frogs, which are called Renet, and that's a little jump between the two, so it's a Fresnet.
A little bit of France in Australia. It's been a pleasure speaking with you both, Henry Fresnet and Peter Woods. Thank you very much for coming on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.